regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend. I did about half of the chores that I needed to get done, but there's always time to mow the lawn later. And I did have a good weekend, so hopefully you did too. Now, we're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio here in just a moment. Mark is, I'm going to actually see Mark in person later this week. Hopefully I'll see you this weekend as well at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Salt Lake City, Utah, Saturday and Sunday. There is a Friday night, I guess, a pregame event, if you will, there at the hotel. You can find out more information, though, at saf.org. It's going to be a fantastic weekend in Salt Lake City, a stellar lineup of Second Amendment advocates who will be speaking. I am very honored to be among those who will be talking on Saturday morning, but it's going to be an incredible weekend, and Mark is going to be emceeing the event on Saturday. We'll talk about that with Mark, but we're going to get started with this comment from Chris Murphy. I wrote about over the weekend that, maybe the Democrats don't need a litmus test on gun control. And what that means, Chris Murphy didn't really say, other than, it's pretty clear that Murphy understands the Democrat Party is shrinking right now. It's becoming more selective in its appeal, I guess would be the nice way to put it. And in order to grow the party, Murphy says, well, maybe we can't be so dogmatic about some of these issues, including his pet issue, gun control. Does Chris Murphy believe that he's wrong on gun control? No. Does Chris Murphy want to see pro-gun Democrats in charge of the Democrat Party? No. But Chris Murphy does understand the math. And if the Democrats keep losing popularity, they're going to keep losing seats. And he is at least cognizant of the fact that gun control doesn't play well among many Americans. So Mark has some thoughts on this as well. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure on a Monday. What a way to start a week.
I know, and I get to finish my week seeing you in person at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Some people wouldn't be too excited about that, but yeah, you do. So you're the victim. Yes, sir.
I am looking very excited about it. I'm very excited about everything that's going to be coming up this weekend. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later on in the conversation here. But you were talking about this last night on Armed American Radio. I wrote about it over the weekend. Chris Murphy, who has made a career out of, pushing gun control, now says that, well, maybe Democrats don't need to have a gun control litmus test. Maybe there should be room for, he didn't come right out and say pro-gun Democrats, right? But maybe you don't all have to think exactly like Chris Murphy if you want to run for office as a Democrat.
Okay. Yeah. That I wrote my entire opening monologue in the first segment of the first hour of the show yesterday on this subject. And then I went back later in the program and I referenced your piece, which was outstanding, by the way. Your analysis of it was spot on. So I knew I had content for my show when I saw what you had put down. And I do appreciate that very much for a number of different reasons. Because let's start with Charlie Kirk, right? And we can tie this together. This has been arguably one of the most difficult weeks in modern American political history. I think we all agree with that. And to my kids who are in their early 20s, 20 and 22, soon to be in 6 days from now, 8 days from now, my son will be 21. My daughter in November will be 23. This is their JFK moment for their generation. My kids were at the turning point in 2022 or 2023 in Phoenix. I should say my daughter and my niece were. My son hadn't attended yet because of his age. And where he was in high school at the time. But they have the photographs of Charlie Kirk on stage, and they're always going to be able to look back and say, look, I was there. I got to see Charlie Kirk. Kind of like when I saw Elvis in 1976. I have photographs of that too, albeit Polaroids and slideshows at the time, no digital photos. But this is a watershed moment in political history. So let's kind of fast forward a little bit to Chris Murphy, because the Democrats thought, and we have evidence of it, it's not conjecture. Jasmine Crockett can't believe that only two Caucasians resisted the event that we saw in Phoenix just yesterday, for example. The Democrats in large part with their reaction that we saw, thought Charlie Kirk would be silenced. They hated the man for what he spoke about because he spoke truth, and they couldn't defeat him in the battlefield of ideas. So now we get over to Chris Murphy, who I believe is realizing that. Ruh-roh, Chris Murphy says in his own mind. Obviously, we've lost some of our whatever it is they thought they had living in their little bubble. And when you look at this and you tie these two things together, it's pretty obvious that Chris Murphy would say, hey, we've got to try to expand something. Now, what does he do? He immediately pivots to what he's very good at, and that's the gun control game, right? And how does he pivot to that? He says, we need to be more inclusive. We need to maybe abandon this litmus test. And he took responsibility for that in his own party. Mm-hmm. If you did not know Chris Murphy was a bald-faced, outright, blatant liar, you would probably believe him. But you and I and our fans and viewers and listeners know better than that. We know that Chris Murphy couldn't care less about any of that. But let's open this up to gun control now. Let's try to grab some of these kids that we're seeing flock to this new generation in massive numbers, this younger generation. Let's see if we can get back in that, because that's a huge voting block that the Democrats lost in 2024. So how do we do that? We go back to the gun control pivot, right? And Chris Murphy, when he did that, here's the error of his ways. He thinks his voters are stupid. And when you talk about gun control, here would be my response to Chris Murphy. If you believe in gun control, don't abandon your convictions, Chris. Run on your convictions. Stay with it. Stay the course. Don't think we're stupid and we're going to fall for this nonsense, because we're not going to. Now, maybe a contingency of his voters, that demographic, will, because they're Democrats. They want to believe what he's saying. But you and I both know if he brings in somebody underneath this tent and abandons this litmus test, those people will eventually just vote lockstep with the Democrats anyway. And even if they don't, he's willing to risk a couple districts here and there from a political standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, say, it's okay, we know you guys are in red districts, we want to keep you in here. Go ahead and run on gun control. You can buck us on that. We've got a big enough majority now because we lied to the American people, and enough people were stupid enough to buy into it. So you can do that and continue to stick with that pro-gun agenda, and it's not going to harm you as far as the Democrat caucus is concerned. But this all ties together. So this shift that we're seeing has got to be, in my estimation, some type of response to what the world is witnessing happening here in American politics, particularly after the last 12 days.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that this navel gazing started after the election. One of John Fetterman's former staffers started this think tank called the Searchlight Institute. And
yeah.
Politico has written a couple of stories about him. You know, his whole thing is Democrats have to take more, quote unquote, moderate positions. They got to be economic populists. I don't think he's talked much about gun issues, but he has told Democrats, you know, quit talking about the gun issue. Right. Mm-hmm. So this has been, I think, a larger conversation going back, as you say, to losing a significant number of youth voters, right? Mm-hmm. This is a demographic that, you know, Democrats historically have won handily, right? I mean, what's the ad? I think it's widely attributed to Winston Churchill. If you're not a liberal under the age of 30, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative over the age of 30, you have no head. Mm-hmm. So, you know, historically, young voters tend to skew left, right? But again, Charlie Kirk, Turning Point USA, the conservative movement in general, making inroads in a lot of areas where the Democrats have had this sort of demographic lock grip, on the electorate. So I think you're right that this has supercharged that moment. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Murphy made his comments when he did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you're spot on, Mark. I mean, what Chris Murphy talked about is expanding the tent, right? He didn't talk about reshaping the Democrat Party. He said there has to be room for people who don't pass his litmus test. Does he want them in power? Does he want them to actually be a majority of the Democrat Party? I don't think so.
No. He wants to use that to get
a majority for the Democrat
Party. Thank you. That's it. Spot on. We're on the same page. He wants to use that however few he can. Let's face it. He doesn't want all of them. He wants just a few, just enough to do what? Regain power, because this is not about his convictions. This is the chameleon effort from the Democrat Party. Chris Murphy's an expert at that. And he is seeing what's happened. I hope I articulated my thought on that a little bit early today, but I hope I articulated that connection there, because there is definitely a connection. And I think that the country is at a turning point. The Democrats have seen that. They've felt it. And then this explosion in the conservative movement under Charlie Kirk since his death. Now, I almost hate to say it this way, but as time begins to pass and Charlie Kirk's death becomes sadly a memory, and as more time begins to pass, a distant memory, I think what we're seeing here is we're not going to let that go. The young movement is not going to let that go. TPUSA, if you saw any of Erica Kirk's statements, and if you looked at it, when you and I spoke a week ago, there were about 38 to 40,000 new requests for Turning Point factions across the country in universities, for chapters in universities and high schools. That number is now over 73,000 this week, Cam.
Wow.
It's nearly doubled. This is a massive, massive movement. And the gun issue rings to the heart of a lot of that because of what Charlie Kirk talked about, our rights, our freedoms, the Bill of Rights, our Second Amendment, these being God-given rights that cannot be taken away by governments. Chris Murphy, we can call him whatever we want. He's not a stupid man. He's been able to play to a lot of stupid people inside the constituency that just follows them lockstep. We all know the Democrats are the party of gun control. Chris Murphy's aware of that. He's not apologizing for anything. He's saying that to try to bring those people back into the tent. And I will predict right now it's going to fail miserably for them because people are onto them. Look, you were talking about voting blocks. Let's not forget they've lost the union vote. All right. The union vote has just swung for Ramaswamy up in Ohio. Okay. They're losing their core constituencies. So they will do everything. A cornered animal gets desperate. They're very dangerous. And the Democrats are very dangerous because this is not about their convictions on gun control. He's just trying to make it look like that. Maybe we need to bring some more in. But we're not stupid enough. And I say we, Democrats, we as a population, are not stupid enough to fall for that. But that shows how desperate the Democrat Party is right now and how they really have nothing. And if you really want proof of that, they're actually considering AOC. Okay. Which I say, please. And run her with Jasmine Crockett as her VP pick. I mean, I don't know how far gone these people are, but you know, when I saw your piece on that, I immediately thought that that likely had something to do with the timing of Chris Murphy saying that in the wake of Charlie Kirk's death.
Yeah.
They have miscalculated, and they have miscalculated in a huge way. This is a political watershed moment that Democrats have just lost their way entirely.
Absolutely. And, but, you know, I mean, listen, even, and I wrote about this in my piece, even if Murphy wants to do this, from a practical standpoint, I don't see how he does. I don't see how you can do this. You can't say, well, okay, we're open now to the idea of, you know, pro-gun candidates when the party is so actively hostile to any supporter of the Second Amendment, right? Where are the Democrat donors for a pro-gun Democrat? What's the gun control lobby going to do? If, you know, pro-gun Democrats start running in Democratic primaries, they're going to try to shut them out, right? And they're going to spend a lot of money to do so because they can't afford to lose influence in the Democrat Party. They have no influence in the Republican Party. So, again, you talk about desperate people doing dangerous things. You know, the gun control lobby is pretty desperate, too. They put all of their eggs in that basket, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of them are in the Democratic Party basket. I mean, listen, they'll love an Adam Kinzinger. You know, when Brian Mass came out in support of a Sullivan's ban, and he was their favorite Republican for a week. I mean, they but again, we're talking about one, two, maybe three members of Congress, you know, a handful of state lawmakers. If they lose any influence within the Democrat Party, the gun control movement, that's an existential crisis for them. So they can't.
They're scared to death.
Absolutely. They can't afford to do what Chris Murphy is saying that the Democrat Party needs to do. So
no, and more proof of that, you can use Gavin Newsom as more proof for that as well, too, Cam. You know, this might shock a lot of people, but I support our Second Amendment rights. No one on planet Earth who follows American politics believed one word that came out of his mouth.
Yeah,
nobody. Right. But for some reason, I get this sense that their own desperation reeks of, well, we've got to at least say these things. And this takes me back, and I mentioned this last night on the show. I go back to Harry Reid when he lied about Mitt Romney's taxes and he got called on it when he was walking out of the halls of the chamber. And he said, a reporter, and I forget who it was, forgive me, said that was a lie. And he looked right at the camera and said, yeah, but it worked. Okay. Yeah, it was a lie. This is all about agenda and power and politics above anything else. And we could go down the spider holes if you want to. We can go to all the crime in the Democrat-led cities across the country. One of my new favorite sayings is, There's no such thing as a blue state. There are only blue cities. And there's a lot of truth to that statement. But we can look at all of the crime and all of the statistics, and John Lott has done this, and we've talked about it. When you look at all the crime in these Democrat-led cities, they have had ample time, spent hundreds and hundreds, if not trillions of dollars over the last 20, 30 years claiming to want to fix crime. Yet nothing happens when they could be doing something. They talk about it. Well, without that constituency being suckered with that money going into the community, they've got nothing. People's eyes are waking up right now. And you're right. That, you know, it's interesting to me how groups like Giffords were not forward thinking enough to figure out that this could happen at some point. Anybody knows if you're investing, guys, okay, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You want some diversification in there as far as your investment portfolio is concerned, lest the market tank and the tech stocks tank and all your money's in one tech stock, that's not going to pay you out too well. That's where the gun grabbers find themselves right this very second, in the midst of this conservative explosion we're seeing across the country. And I'll make another prediction, and this is a bold one to make so early on. You know, historically, the party in power loses midterms, in the midterms loses seats in Congress. Nah, we gain them. Not only do we gain them in the House, we gain a bigger majority in the Senate as well. And I would go as far as saying it's possible in the Senate we could gain a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate in 2026 because of what's happening. Wow. I don't think the Democrat vision is gone. And I really, truly believe that we could be watching the very death now. We're watching the death now, the final breaths of this supercharged woke left party that had better get its act together, move more to the center, and start working with the American people to provide some real, you know, some real answers. We've lost that. I'm old enough to remember when that happened in American politics. My kids have never seen it in their generation. This is what Chris Murphy was, I think, in a very... I don't know the word that I can use. It would be too friendly. Of course, we can say whatever we want here, but I won't do that. He's not a stupid man. He gets it, but I think that's what he's attempting to do. To me, it was just a trial balloon. Let's see how this sticks, because they're so desperate. They're going to do whatever they can. And the gun issue has always been his, you know, his big deal, but it fails on them miserably.
I think you're right. And yeah, again, it's all about, I mean, you know, as you said, this is all about the Democrats trying to regain power. It's about them trying to regain, you know, relevancy in the minds of the American people at a time in which, you know, again, the Democrat Party and its platform is becoming so toxic.
Toxic,
right?
Is the word, yeah.
You know, and I mean, listen, you look at the polls, Americans, I think, generally aren't happy with politics in general. But they are more displeased with Democrats, right? I mean, I saw a poll last week. I think the Republicans were underwater by like 5 points. Democrats were underwater by like 15. And I think that's probably pretty accurate, right? I think a lot of Americans are fed up with politics in general, but you've got to pick between one of the two, and they're going to pick the Republicans.
What is it when you say that? This is interesting. When you say that we're fed up with politics, and we are, what about politics are we fed up with? Let's just go a little bit under the surface. We're sick and tired politically of not being able to talk to each other. Neil McCabe once said on my show famously, and we've used the drop over the last few years because it was so true, the subject of, you know, people who have family members that now will not show up at their homes for Thanksgiving because of politics. I have a family member who a relative of mine will say when we're in town, whenever they're in town, remember not to talk politics with my husband. To which I say, oh, come on, give it a break. You know, I'm not going to do that. I love your husband. We can get along and have fun. And we do. But there are many families that can't. And I have another relative that is not welcome in my home and wouldn't come here anyway. All right. And Neil McCabe famously said on my show, think about this, Mark. If you can't even have dinner with them, how are you supposed to have a country with them?
Right.
And that's what Americans are fed up with, that we can't talk anymore. We've lost our ability. And, you know, a lot of that, as I harp on a lot, has to do with this. It has to do with the advent of social media, which I believe personally is destroying the psyche of the nation.
Yeah.
I don't know how we get past this. I don't have that answer. I wish I did. I could probably write a book and make a lot of money. But I don't know how we get past it. That cat, that toothpaste is out of this tube, and I don't know. And I think what we're seeing is Murphy's smart enough to figure that out, and they're just throwing these trial balloons out there right now.
Yeah,
we live in fascinating times, but very scary times, because we have three more years of Trump to go, And look at what we, the reactions to Trump we're seeing from the Democrats. Imagine what the next 36 months is going to look like. It can be pretty scary to think about.
Absolutely. All right. Something that is not scary to think about, the Gun Rights Policy Conference, which is coming up this weekend. You've got a cocktail party, or I guess not a party, but a, you know, drinks and a chance to hang out with folks on Friday night, then all day Saturday, all day Sunday, just a stunning lineup of speakers. You're going to be emceeing Saturday's event, right?
I'll be emceeing all day. Friday night, I get a little bit of a break. I am doing, I didn't realize it was a debate. I'm going to be talking about AI and the future of AI at the AmCon event on Friday mid-afternoon as a keynote. And I found out early this morning when I was looking at the itinerary that it's a debate. Cheryl Todd and Amanda Suffolkool will be arguing for, I'll be arguing against with Lee the Gunwriter Williams, our good friend. I had no idea it was going to be a debate, but I'm looking forward to it because I know the dangers of AI better than anybody else in that room because I was the first human being on Earth to sue an artificial intelligence chatbot for defaming me and lying about me and accusing me of stealing millions of dollars from this organization right here. So it's going to be an interesting conversation. Saturday's event is going to be a lot of fun. I've emceed that event for a number of years, as you know. But we've moved into a different format. So we've got these fireside chats. So I'll be interviewing Steve Montenegro, the Arizona Republican Speaker of the House for the state of Arizona, alongside Austin Knutson, the Montana Attorney General. And then in the second one at 2 o'clock in the afternoon out in Salt Lake, I'll be interviewing, and this will be fascinating. I've got a lot of research to do between now and then. I've got to bone up on my Ruby Ridge knowledge because I'll be interviewing Sarah Weaver from Ruby Ridge fame, who was the infant at the time the shootings at Ruby Ridge occurred. So this is going to be a fascinating time. But Ryan Petty will be there, Parkland Dad, you will be there, I will be there, AWR will be there, Lee Williams will be there, Alan Gottlieb, and a whole litany of others. So guys, if you're watching and you can still come out. Hotel rooms are dirt cheap for you. The entire weekend is free to attend. All you've got to do is get yourself there. So that's the 26th, 27th, and 28th coming up this week in Salt Lake City, and I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Yeah, absolutely. As you say, you know, a great lineup of folks. I'm looking forward to hearing and seeing your fireside chats. I'll actually be speaking, I think, right after your fireside chat with Montana Attorney General. There's a the 15-minute break, so folks can you know, get something to drink. They can use the restroom, and then I'll be speaking right after that. So yeah, I'm thrilled, man. I'm looking forward to this. This is actually the first GRPC that I will have attended in person, so I am
Well,
super
I'm
excited.
introducing you, so be nice to me because I can say whatever I want on that mic when I introduce you. You
I
don't
was
want
going
to
to
toot
say, you
your
be nice to me. I think it's how this
own.
works. All right,
It's a lot of
Mark.
fun. You're going to enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, man, you have a great week. I will see you out west here in just a few days.
You better believe it. Travel safe, brother. I'll see you before the weekend.
All right, you too. Mark Walters joins from Armed American Radio here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Mark for joining me on the program, and I am looking forward to seeing him and again, hopefully, you at GRPC this weekend. All right, before we turn to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, I want to take a moment to talk about something that I'm really excited about. It's called Freedom Chat. It's a next generation messaging app that's designed for people who still believe that privacy matters. The team just launched their alpha version. It's available today on both Android and iPhone. And I mean, honestly, you should do what I've done and download it. Unlike these so-called free apps that spy on you and sell your data, Freedom Chat was built with your privacy first. Your messages are end-to-end encrypted. They're not stored on servers. Even screenshots are blocked. There's no tracking. There's no mining. There's no listening in. It's just private communication the way that it should be. And here's something I really like. Freedom Chat has no ties to big tech. It's built by people that I've spoken with, talked to, whatever. And I can tell you, I trust them. I think you should too. They've even partnered with Rumble Cloud to ensure independence. I believe in it so much that I've actually created my own private channel inside Freedom Chat. It's at Bearing Arms Cam and Company. You can subscribe there. I'll be sharing some exclusive posts and content you won't find anywhere else. The best part is that nobody can see what channels you follow or which posts you react to. This is your own secure, curated feed. So if you're ready for a messenger that actually reflects your values and keeps your conversations private, head over to freedomchat.com. Download it today. That's freedomchat.com, where freedom still means something. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report will start there with a case out of Lexington, Kentucky. Here's the headline: 20-year-old charged in bus stop shooting while on electronic monitoring. It's actually even worse than that, although that is bad enough. Jonte Mattingly, 20 years old, is accused, along with another person who's not yet been arrested, of shooting somebody at a bus stop in Lexington, Kentucky last Thursday morning. Victim remains in critical condition at last report after being shot in the head. And Lex 18, the NBC affiliate in Lexington, says, according to the criminal complaint, surveillance footage captured Mattingly with an ankle monitor under his pants. He was on probation and had been released just last month on electronic monitoring in connection with a robbery case from July. Last year, Mattingly was charged with murder in the death of a 17-year-old, but a grand jury declined to indict him. But he is, he has been convicted of a felony of some sort because he's been charged with first-degree assault, felon possession of a handgun, also with three counts of wanton endangerment, first degree, criminal mischief, first degree, tampering with physical evidence. Amazingly, despite all this, the judge set his bond at $85,000, which is not all that high. All things considered, I mean, honestly, given this guy's previous criminal history, I would think he would be eligible for no bond whatsoever. In addition to the unnamed felony and the robbery charge that he's facing that led to him being placed on bond with the condition that he wear an ankle monitor, court records showed a two-page report from probation and parole listing all of his previous probation violations, including failure to report arrest, providing false information to probation and parole officers, absconding, just simply not showing up for parole meetings, multiple instances of marijuana use. I mean, again, he just got out on bond last month for a robbery that allegedly took place. Well, I guess the robbery took place, but allegedly committed by him in July. A previous felony conviction. And all of these instances of violating his parole, he's 20 years old. And now he's again accused of another vicious, violent crime. I'm not in favor of putting everybody who's arrested behind bars until they go to trial. I think that should be reserved for pretty extraordinary circumstances. But in this case, I think this is one of those extraordinary circumstances. I think you can make a case that Mr. Mattingly here has proven himself to be a danger to the community. At least beyond reasonable doubt that he poses an ongoing threat to the community when he is out. Because he keeps getting arrested for crimes that he's allegedly committed while he's out on bond. So at what point does the court system step in and say, you know, we've given you all kinds of chances, but you're not abiding by the terms of your probation. You're not abiding by the terms of your bond. You keep being arrested and charged with some seriously violent offenses. So yeah, we're going to keep you here in custody until you go to trial because we're concerned for the safety of the community at large when you're out on the streets. Again, I think that should be a pretty extraordinary thing, but I think Mr. Mattingly has met these circumstances there. On to today's Armed Citizen story from the Windy City of Chicago, where Fox 32 reports a concealed carry holder shot and killed a man who broke into an apartment over the weekend. I mean, honestly, it's kind of irrelevant that this woman is a concealed carry holder, but I guess that's just kind of shorthand for legal gun owner. I mean, she didn't need to have a concealed carry license in her own residence or even if she was in somebody else's house, but whatever. It happened Saturday morning just before 7 a.m. According to Fox 32, multiple people inside the apartment at the time, a 28-year-old woman shot the suspect, hitting him twice. The offender taken to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Police say they're investigating the incident that it appears to be domestic in nature, but they didn't provide any details. So we don't know if this woman was the target of the guy trying to break in, if she was there, you know, maybe trying to protect somebody who was the intended target. Again, we don't know. We don't know the circumstances, but hopefully we will get more information. Police have not identified the man who was killed, so we should get some more details about what happened here, the circumstances under which this woman acted in self-defense and defense of others, and hopefully we'll be able to provide that to you here going forward. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a Trenton, New Jersey man who helped save a life after a huge fire broke out Friday evening, a fire that actually claimed the life of an 18-year-old high school student. Tragically, Joseph Cuculo, a JROTC cadet at Trenton Central High School, honored by his students, his fellow students, staff there, the ROTC program, calling him an individual who exemplified the highest standards of discipline, commitment, and respect, who approached every challenge with determination. His positive spirit, quiet strength, and willingness to support others left a lasting impact on everyone who had the honor of knowing him. And again, tragically, Kukulu died in this blaze, which, again, consumed seven different homes. And this could have been so much worse. The mayor of Trenton, Reed Gasoria, highlighted what one Good Samaritan did. Excuse me. An individual named Donnie Wilson was driving by, saw the flames, saw a kid actually get out of one of these houses. And so he stopped his car, ran over to the kid, make sure the kid was okay. The kid said that his grandmother was inside still. So Donnie Wilson went inside this burning home, was able to help her to safety. He even tried to save her cats so that she would leave because she didn't want to leave without him. I mean, it's just incredible that, you know, a individual like that, put himself at risk and, did so to save the life of a total stranger. So to the firefighters who responded, but also to the Good Samaritans who acted, including Donnie Wilson, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And our hearts go out to the family of Joseph Kukulu. For the loss of their inspiring and incredible son. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, though. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We've got contributions today, not only for myself and Tom Knighton, but my friend John Petrolino. And our friend Ranjit Singh checking in as well. So a full lineup of writers for you at Bearing Arms, keeping up to date on everything going on with our right to keep and bear arms. Not sure what tomorrow's topic will be. We might talk about the oral arguments in the Seventh Circuit today over Illinois' gun and magazine ban. But there might be something else that pops up this afternoon. Either way, we've got you covered tomorrow as well. Until then, be safe. Be well. And be free. I think I got the be well and be safe next time. You know what I'm talking about, right?